from last night's Tonys. These are the kids from Parkland High School, the drama club. Pretty cool, listen.
525,600 minutes. How do you measure? Measure a year.
Great moment. Great moment from last night's Tony Awards. Didn't see a lot of it, but I caught that. And a couple other things we'll play clip-wise for you later on. Dean will be on. But those kids.
They're great, aren't they?
What a voice on that girl.
Right?
Whoa. Whoa.
We're saying off the air, that's about 5 feet of white, and she turned into Aretha Franklin right there.
She's going to be discovered.
What a powerful performance that I did not watch.
Did you see the standing ovation this morning? Did you get that part of the clip?
I saw it on YouTube.
What were you doing last night that you couldn't watch the Tonys?
I was watching Kanye versus Kim on the Kardashians versus Kanye West on Celebrity Family Feud.
Oh, so the good stuff.
Yeah.
You were catching up.
Stuff that you're supposed to watch.
Who won?
I couldn't tell you.
This is actually not
really
a competition.
Yeah, I think the Kardashians did. I think they did.
Show number 1164. That's Justin Coffin. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Mary, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Mary and Steve Grzanich are in the new place. Why are you pretty good?
Oh, I don't know. I just had a little computer issue this morning. It kind of flusters you, but I'm good now.
Steve Grzanich, is the place coming together any better?
It's coming together. It's unbelievable. These guys have done just an amazing job over here getting everything ready for us. And
what's different about the window behind you? I'm looking at a monitor. It looks like somebody put glass blocks in. Is that some sort of window treatment?
That's the hotel that's across the street.
Oh, I'm looking out the window.
Yeah, that might be the Sheraton. Was that the Sheraton that's across the street there?
Mm-hmm. Across the river, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I was talking to my friend Paul Coit, the London bureau chief, this morning as we were driving in. And I told Paul that we're surrounded in the new place by condos and a hotel. And he said, well, if the show's no good, imagine the entertainment for you.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And so far, it has been quite, there have been quite some scenes.
Yep. Scenes I don't need to see.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Nope.
All right, 6:13. Let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't kick. Get your kicks. With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, 8 o'clock tonight, Chicago time. Lil' Kim and Donald J. Trump will get together for the first time in the last half hour or so. We've learned that President Trump and Lil' Kim will be doing the first 2 hours together alone with just their translators. Kind of blind date situation, get together. It's always awkward, first few minutes.
I hope there's a camera there just to watch how the president will not wait for the translation.
Yes, and he'll jump in.
And just keep jumping in because he has no patience. That's my guess.
It's always risky when you have translators involved because translators are human beings subject to emotions like all of us. And at some point, a translator could just go rogue and just start saying things that Kim never said.
So what is that? Somebody tell me what the benefit is of having them meet by themselves with nobody else.
Don't know.
Couldn't they just say whatever they wanted to say happened, even if it didn't happen at all? I mean,
you would think it wouldn't take 2 hours. You would think that there's a 50, especially with his attention span, his being Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. The first 15 minutes of, hey, just wanted to take a couple of minutes with you to say hello. Glad we're doing this.
Nice hair.
I think that's what they're going to talk about, product. And then get after it. 2 hours is a long time.
How do you have a state-run media? That's going to be the question.
What are you talking about, Fox News?
No, that's exactly.
So he is. By the time we get in here tomorrow morning, we'll know whether it's duck and cover time or whether we've got some positives to come out of this.
But you're sure we're calling him Little Kim and not Rocket Man?
I don't know what we're calling him.
Lil.
Rocket? Lil?
Yeah, it's L-I-L.
Lil.
Whatever that little symbol is. Next, President Trump got in a fight with Canada over the weekend because you know how Canada can be. I don't like the way they're looking at us. This is going to make hockey season so awkward for us. You know what I mean? Canadian team that comes into town, it wasn't us.
Wait a minute. There are a lot of Canadians on the teams that are in town.
They have to like us. But the Canadian teams that come in, I don't know. I just think I think Jim will belt the Canadian national anthem out louder than ever.
If the Canadians really wanted to put a tariff on imports, I would think hockey players would be the way to go. Imagine if we had to pay 25% more for Jonathan Taves.
That's a moneymaker. No, that is a moneymaker. There's no question about it. Next. The Golden State Warriors did what over the weekend?
They completed a sweep of the Cleveland Cavaliers, the first in the NBA Finals since 2007. They made it look awfully easy.
Mm. Mm. Wait, you're live where?
I'm live actually outside the arena in Cleveland on my way back to
the
Oracle
Quicken
Loans Arena. Quicken Loans Arena. You know, the thing came out afterwards that LeBron James played the last three games with a broken hand, suffered when he slammed it on a whiteboard after they had that overtime loss in game one. So he didn't say anything about it, came out after game four. You wonder now if LeBron James, I don't think it would have made a difference, quite frankly. I think Golden State would have won anyway, but there is that.
Was he making an excuse?
No, not really. I mean, it was pretty evident what happened out there, and it got ugly in Game Four. I mean, Stephen Curry, who wasn't even the MVP of the Finals, went nuts. I mean, he just made some unbelievable shots.
What does this mean for the Bulls? Absolutely nothing. That's
doesn't
exactly
really mean
right.
Much for the Bulls.
What does this mean for our relationship with Canada?
That's a really good question.
Right. Next, Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman are fighting.
Uh-oh.
Would you pay to see it?
No.
I don't know.
Is this like one of those UFC fights?
Yes, I would.
It's a cage match. They're on the set of Big Little Lies. Oh. And Meryl Streep is doing a character arc. I think it's 6 episodes.
Oh, she's doing guest appearance.
And I don't know what her character is. I don't watch the show, but it's a big hit.
It's a pretty good show, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I watched the first episode.
It's so good. Far. There's a lot of
somebody
star
says
power.
Like Desperate Housewives, but with violence and language.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
A lot of stars and star power, and it shows in that show.
Samberg, you watch this show, don't you? Don't you watch this Big Little Lies nonsense?
It was Big Little Lies show. Off of a book, right? It was a one off kind of thing that they turned into a second season that is not part of the book.
So it's like the Housewives of somewhere. You
know? Well, that's what I said. Desperate Housewives with violence.
Don't even compare it to a Desperate Housewives. Agreed. It is in a whole different caliber. It is amazing. We binge watched it, Pat and I, in a weekend.
It's really good.
Yeah,
it won all the awards. I mean, it's not in the category of
This is
it's a way to describe the show to the rest of us that don't watch it. For you two who apparently have stock in the show, just settle down.
If you watch it, I know that woman. I know we have one of those in our group. You know, like they did.
Do you have a Meryl Streep and a Nicole Kidman, or you don't know what Meryl Streep is yet?
I don't know her character well enough because she wasn't in it last year. But no, we have a Nicole Kidman. We have a Reese Witherspoon. I'm a few of those people at any moment. So,
well, I'll vouch for that.
I don't want to be any of the guys. The guys are not good in that show.
No, they're all bad guys. That's exactly right. Quack. 60 people sick and dozens hospitalized with salmonella after tainted pre-cut melons. Oh, I was in a band called the Tainted Pre-Cut Melons. You know, and we had a rough run. They were distributed to stores like Walmart and Kroger and Costco. Oh, my, and even Whole Foods in several states. The CDC says the outbreak's been traced to a facility in Indiana called Cato Foods. Is that run by Cato Caitlin?
It could be. I've been known to get the cubed watermelon, like the one that's just because it's the cheapest of the.
Wasn't that the pre-cut?
Yeah, that's the pre-cut.
That's the pre-cut.
We get it too.
Yeah.
The company has issued a recall notice for us, for Georgia, for Indiana, for Michigan, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, wherever you're listening around the country this morning, and asking them to remove clear plastic containers of watermelon, honeydew, cantaloupe, and mixed melons from the shelves.
Oof.
So if you bought melons, Jules not on the list, but if you bought melons from Whole Foods, for instance, over the weekend, or Walmart, or I guess Costco as well, don't eat them. Don't eat the pre-cut stuff.
You'll know within 12 to 72 hours. You'll have fever, abdominal cramps, and diarrhea. And then
it's not.
I don't know who laughed there in the background.
It is Sandberg. Could be Nicole Kidman.
Come on.
And then
the illness could last for 4 to 7 days.
Yes.
So not pleasant.
With all the fun facts.
Well, but here's the deal. The labeling on the fruit is not like a labeling on a canned good or whatever, where you can literally do a little detective work and see where the distributor is from. You don't know if these are Indiana melons.
They make it feel like they just grew the melons in the back garden of Whole Foods.
Not so much. And then somebody's back there cutting it. That's what I always think at Whole Foods, that somebody in the back is cutting it.
The report I heard last night, they suggested that if you bought any of this melon, that you throw it out.
You mean like I just suggested?
Well, you suggested don't eat it.
Well, don't eat it to me means throw it out. It's not an art piece you leave in the refrigerator.
Get moldy.
Right?
Well, I suppose not.
Look at the melon.
Dave just wants to see what happens. Going to give it 7 days.
It just seems kind of you would take for. I mean, why would
you're
you not throw it out?
Why would you keep it?
Yeah. Some of this stuff is pretty expensive. If you've ever bought it, I would take it back and get my money back. First of all,
it's expensive.
I mean, you're talking about $7. I've seen it as high as $7 for one of these things of fruit.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't know you could return fruit.
I would.
You can return anything.
Return anything.
You have to take it
to Nordstrom because they'll take anything, won't
they? Yeah. Yeah. Can you believe people are actually going to have to buy a melon and cut it up now themselves?
It's amazing.
What kind of country do we live in?
This is what happens when you mess with Canada.
Next. And finally, Saturday night's 15th annual clothing optional bike ride, 14 miles through the city, hit some of the busiest spots, the Magnificent Mile. Sometimes known as Michigan Avenue or State Street. You pick one because it depends on if you're a tourist or a local and you don't know what you're talking about. Lakeview, Wicker Park. Where else did they go? You were on it, weren't you? Weren't you riding your bike naked?
I have done that. Not organized, but I have done that.
You might want to wipe down a divvy, by the way, this morning if you get on one of those divvies.
Well, don't you do that regularly?
Well,
I don't think I'd get on a divvy without hosing it down.
A double wipe down.
I would be a double wipe down today.
Yeah.
It's okay. It rained.
Well, that's your top six at six.
For the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, what's coming up? See, this we got to fix. We got to fix this. This is like a changing saddles. David Jennings is wrapping himself in headphone cords trying to get into the seat right now. He almost choked himself to death trying to find his way to the microphone. All right, pull yourself together. What's coming up in 5 minutes?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Purple rain. Still raining this morning in Chicago. I hope wherever you are, it's a dry basement situation because in that way for everybody. Sandberg, your house is, it's no longer livable. You're going to have to knock it down?
Exactly.
What happened?
The rain that came Friday night into Saturday morning caused us to get water in our basement, which happens occasionally. And all of our neighbors got water in their basements as well. So one of the guys in the neighborhood thinks the city had some kind of backup somewhere, and that's why our backyards there was a river running.
Well, why didn't your sump pump work?
Our sump pump did work, but we have some seepage areas, which are the...
You don't want the seepage.
Which are the unfinished areas. But it got into the carpet finished area this weekend. But for the very first time, it's happened. We've lived there, I don't know, 3 years or so. And every time we have gotten water, it has been during Blackhawks playoffs or convention or something where my husband is not home. This is the first time.
But honestly, you've talked about Pat Boyle before. He's completely useless. Why would it help if he was home?
Well, it was nice to have
just emotional support.
Yes, and actually, he was helpful because it's nice to have another body when you're moving a few things around. And he was shop vacuuming, you know, and he was able to see what I usually have to do.
Okay, so you're not making him out to be, or he's more useful than you're making him out to be.
Yeah, usually he's just not there.
He can do manual labor as long as he listens to the boss.
He takes direction well, but he's just never around. That's more the problem. And so usually I have to do it. And so he did it, and it felt like people go to counseling and things like that. It was almost like a marriage boot camp. It's the first thing we've had to do where it was somewhat disastrous in our house and we had to deal with it.
That's not a bad idea if we had marriage therapy over stressful situations around your house.
Like
the therapist does a house call.
Yeah.
You're trying to put something together. You're trying to clean up the basement. And there's the counselor as you two yell at each other.
You need duct tape. You need gallons of water and you need therapy.
Yes. Those are three things. That's what we need. So, and I was telling Dave, because of whatever was happening outside, our sump pump took in a bunch of like pine needles or something. So we were sticking our arms down the sump pump to clear this disgusting stuff because the ball got stuck up, you know, like, and so it was just running. And it was, and because we did that together, it was like when we went to dinner on Saturday night, I like loved him more.
So it felt like you would overcome an intruder into your home.
Yes,
needle intruder into your home.
We did this together, and like I didn't
nothing's
feel alone.
Hot, ladies. Nothing's hotter than a man who helps with your pine needle clog.
And he had the longer arms, so he could get more of it. So it was still a pain in the butt. And we need to have one of those people come and do the take care of that seepage situation, the waterproofing, whatever.
Seepage. You have to toss a bunch of stuff.
You know, we didn't, I'm not a big stuff person, so there's not a lot of stuff. We will have to, the carpeting needs to be replaced. And our neighbors already tore out their carpeting. They're awfully ambitious.
Everybody in the neighborhood had water?
Yeah, down our street.
Now, you've never invited me to your home, nor should you. But aren't you on a higher piece of property? I thought like you're on a knob. You're like on Knob Hill or something in your particular neighborhood.
We are a little bit higher, but we have a river in our neighborhood and water from Sunset Ridge.
So it's a little house on the prairie situation is what you're talking about.
Yeah,
you're lucky to be alive.
We are basically. So, and we didn't kill each other, so that was nice.
Well, that's the upside. There's no question about it.
Yeah, so I'm suggesting it for people as a marriage counseling. The two things I suggest, getting a new mattress, that helps your marriage, and doing a disaster together.
No matter how useless your husband may be, have him help you in these times of trouble.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so I loved him very much for helping me.
Seepage, oh boy.
It's the worst. Have it like where they get feet, you know.
Well, let me tell you
something.
In my double wide in East St. Louis, I have a basement. And a lot of people don't with the double wides. And the seepage. Seepage cost me over $1.5 million.
Yeah,
that was two cracks.
Yeah, that's.
You just don't put anything nice down. We get seepage all the time.
Don't put anything. You know, it's funny. I've heard people say that. Don't put anything nice in your basement.
Yes.
Well, what the hell's a basement for?
Yeah, right.
Storage of Rubbermaids.
Well, our kids,
it's
finished. People, they play down there and sleep down there. And,
that's your first mistake, having a nice home with a finished basement.
Yeah, that's
what a mistake.
And our house was built in 1958. And that's all Pat kept saying when he was shop vacuuming. This is what you get with a house built in 1958. But what are you supposed to do? You know, like...
Mm-hmm. Dave, you got the seepage as well?
Well, I think you had some words of wisdom for me, Steve. You said there's no such thing as a little seepage.
Yeah,
I have I get one drop. When it rains for 40 days and 40 nights, I get that one little drop in one corner. But other than that...
Two words, life savings. Gone.
Yeah.
Just gone.
Yeah, I it hasn't...
I saw
we're in pretty good shape.
There were two little ghostly, streams of... It wasn't a stream. It looked like little water stains on the wall. I figured $8 to fix it. You would not believe how expensive it is to fix seepage. If you're going to work this morning and have a seepage problem, God bless you and your family.
Have they solved that problem with the new builds with basements?
I don't think so.
Do you think people still are getting seepage?
I thought you could take the commercial with the guy with the spray that turns into rubber where he cuts the boat in half and he fixes it? Why can't you just spray that on the wall?
It seems like you should be able to.
Yeah.
All right, good. I'm glad we fixed this. 6:33. We're back with the headlines next. And then Dr. Kevin Most. Big birthday for the doc this week. Doc's birthday
really?
Coming up this weekend.
A milestone, huh?
Well, it could be. We don't want to say.
Okay.
But at 6:33, we're back after this on 720 WGN.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Good morning, Dr. Morse.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I understand I misspoke. I'm fine, thank you. I understand I misspoke. Your birthday's next week.
My birthday is on Father's Day. Yeah, next Sunday.
Oh, next Sunday. Yeah, this coming. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I have a few more days then to forget to get you something.
Yeah, perfect.
That's a tradition, Justin, that Dr. Most and I have each year.
Yeah, you forget each other's
forget
birthday.
To get each other's stuff for a birthday.
You remember the birthday, you just purposely avoid giving gifts.
Isn't that dude thing?
Yeah.
It's a guy thing.
I mean, it's embarrassing when you give the gift that they gave you the year before, the next year to them.
That's not a bad idea if we just re-gifted back and forth.
Yeah.
Right.
At least make a bid out of it, right?
Well, here's the thing. Doc and I are old enough where it's not going to be that long where we'll forget we got it the year before. Soon. A terrible week last week in regards to losing two celebrities to suicide. Of course, this happens every day across America. As I've said many times, I lost two friends to suicide. And this on the heels of a very extensive study that came out last week that said in some states, suicide rates are up 50%. Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, of course, were the two famous names that took their own lives last week. So let's go in reverse order here. What do we know about that study?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the CDC looks at, they'll pick illnesses to look at and look how we've been doing over the past 15 years, 20 years. Are we improving? Is treatment getting better? And unfortunately, with suicide, it is not. It's gotten worse. Not only are the rates up, the rates are up in every single state with the exception of Nevada. So we certainly, when we look at cancer, we see rates going down. We see life expectancy going up. Suicide, we are not seeing that at all. And we really need more awareness and to get more active in it.
I have seen the studies that say social media is hurt in this regard. It's helped lead to more depression. Also studies that while we talk to each other more than we ever have, we're not talking to people intimately like we had in the past. We're not making the same sort of connections. There's never been more resources. There's never been more abilities for people to find things they need to help them when they're desperate. Why aren't people taking advantage of those?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, it's interesting. We talk about the social media and the impact of social media on it. We also take the impact of just straight regular media. Numbers to the suicide hotline call were up 25% to 50% last week alone. So that awareness there, whether it was a friend being aware and talking and calling to say, hey, I have a concern about a friend of mine, or whether it was people who were actively, you know, considering it and are depressed. So sometimes the media, we miss out on opportunities to talk about things that may trigger other people to act.
Dr. Most, how much responsibility do you put on the medical community, doctors, mental illness clinics, the like, when it comes to this study and the fact that suicide rates are increasing?
Yeah, it's interesting, Justin. When we look at that, and I give the analogy, if you were really had major depression, you could still come into a doctor's office visit for 15 minutes, and I may not know. You may answer the questions totally the right way so that I may not know. So that portion of it, I'm not sure that we are dropping the ball. The portion where we are dropping the ball is how we're doing treatment and how we have coverage in this country. It probably is going to be very surprising to people that 60% of the counties across the United States do not have a single psychiatrist. That is 60 million individuals with a new onset of mental illness who won't receive care from a psychiatrist because we don't have enough and we don't have them in the right places.
Well, let me talk as well about the way that we deal with suicide in culture. You talked about social media and media in general, but just in how we relate to the disease, we say we people committed suicide. We talk as if it's almost a crime. There's stigma attached to it in the sense that nobody actually wants to talk about it. Is this just a point where, like cancer and other diseases, that there needs to be more of an awareness campaign or at least a paradigm shift when it comes to suicide?
100%. The social stigma still is there. We have to realize that depression is just like brain cancer. It's like Alzheimer's. It's like Parkinson's. It is a disease of the brain. And you hit it right on the head. We say people committed suicide. We have to change that. We have to change it. We have to say they died by suicide, death by suicide. This, we have to change how we think about this, and we have to get rid of the embarrassment of people being depressed, because it's not because they're weak. Look at Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, probably two of the wildly successful people, and yet they had these demons that they were fighting that took their lives.
The chemical imbalance in the brain that leads to major depression that sometimes is untreatable is a huge part of this, but I don't want to slip over the fact that you said 50% of people who kill themselves eventually are it's found out they were never diagnosed with depression. Is that because it was missed, or because there's a causal effect or cause and effect here that I'm not aware of?
Yeah, often it was missed. So we do what we call a psychological autopsy, and we start to look then, and that sometimes it's done by a physician, sometimes it's just done by the family members, and they start to look, and they look at all the things, and they say, oh, wow, boy, he did do this at work. He did start to retract from his friends. He did talk about being worthless and hopelessness, and he wasn't sleeping well. All those things that we look for depression, it's kind of like, oh, wow, yeah, they were there. We just never acted on them.
We'll come back and talk more about this in a second with Dr. Kevin Most. If you need help, get it. Please ask for it. 800-273-TALK, 800-273-8255. Nobody's going to judge you. They haven't heard anything that you could tell them, or they haven't not heard anything that you could tell them. There's nothing they haven't heard. I would also, again, recommend RebeccasDream.org. That's the foundation started after my friend Rebecca Cutler killed herself. Great resources there as well, because, Doc, as you know, sometimes you got to talk to somebody that's walking the same walk you are and understands that darkness to really get some help. And that's what Rebecca's Dream does, and that's what they can do at the Suicide Helpline. So 800-273-8255. We'll come back. Much more to discuss about this in a second. Text line 312-981-7200. And Steve Grzanich will tell us what's coming up at 7 o'clock in just a second. First, Mary, what do you have?
Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
And Steve normally goes first. Steve, the mic flag was perfectly blocking your head, and I thought someone had taken you hostage.
Yeah, they have moved the camera, Steve, from Friday till today, and it's right in the position of where my mic must be.
Right, so I couldn't even tell that you were sitting there.
Yeah, so I will try to do maybe, how about I'll do this?
Some sort of calisthenics prior to me tossing to you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's all right. Back with Dr. Kevin Most. The topic is suicide because it's been so much of the news, and frankly, we should talk about it more, as Doc has already stated. Doc, the thing that I've learned from my own experience is that we need to also teach people to not say, oh, you have so much to live for. You need to snap out of it. Maybe you just need more sleep. Those type of things, those sort of dismissive things, because it's a difficult conversation to have with somebody you care about. And a lot of times the folks that care about you the most are going to get frustrated because you've been down for so long, because the understanding statements you need to make are, why are you hurting? What can I do to help?
Steve, you hit it right on the head. If someone reaches out to you and they're talking that way and you dismiss them and say, don't worry about it, shake it off, they're not coming back to you. That's just going to reinforce that what they're feeling is hurting them. And they're not going to come back to you again and do that. So we really need to be aware, because like both of you have said, medicine is good. We can treat a lot of these patients, but we have to know they're out there. So we need the public, we need the family, we need the friends to be able to identify those people and reach out to them and say, hey, come on, let's get you some help.
I wonder, as you say that the suicides are up 50% and the study is tremendous when you look at it, is this a fact that depression is up as much, that we're seeing more and more signs of people being depressed that we hadn't seen before? Or is this a situation where the medical communities, like you just said, that there's no psychiatrists in over half of the counties in this country, is deteriorating because of budgets, resources, things like that, that we're not funding when it comes to general municipalities?
Yeah, it's if you look at, I'll take the state of Illinois. You know, what are some of the first things we cut with budgets? We cut these social services because they're soft there. They feel like we may not need them. So, you know, that part of it is there. The other thing, Justin, is that what we've looked at recently here now, too, is our issue with opioids. So a lot of opioids are either called, maybe called suicide as well. But we really do need to get to the point where more primary care doctors are actually given the chance and the opportunity to treat these patients. You know, we aren't going to build more psychiatrists. That's going to be pretty much a fixed number, and you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen there. But what we need to do is we need insurance companies and the federal government to understand that to treat somebody in a primary care office, a family practice office, a pediatrician, even an OB-GYN's office, they need to be able to compensate those doctors to treat them, to make them more active in the treatment. And I hate to bring it back to compensation, but sometimes it is.
Well, I mean, you know, that's everybody gets paid because you have to get paid to go into that line of work. So nurse practitioners and physicians assistants are a big part of the rural medicine story in the future. They need to be deputized to be able to do this kind of work as well, right?
Absolutely. APNs and PAs are going to be very important in this, as well as telemedicine. The ability of a psychiatrist to be able to communicate with somebody is simple over Skype, and then be able to make that diagnosis and hand it off to that APN and PA or the family doctor in rural America. But we really need to get treatment more to that front line.
Run out of time here. We're going to post Dr. Most's notes, as we always do, including a list of symptoms that you need to look for and those who may be most at risk, warning signs, things of that nature. The general summary here, and it's very much an umbrella that a lot of things live under, is that somebody feels a sense of worthlessness that they can't shake, and a sense of being a burden to those they love the most. It's a very dangerous area to be in, and you can't save them, but you can offer to help again and again and again. So I hope you will. In the meantime, pass this number along, 800-273-8255. That's the Suicide Helpline, the National Helpline. No judgment there. And again, RebeccasDream.org with a bunch of great resources. You can spend a few minutes on that website and pass that along and help your friends navigate it, those who need it most. So, all right, great notes as always, Doc. And we post these with the podcast, which will go up in just moments, and people will be able to see all the work that's being done here and all the things you can do. So thanks for that.
You got it. Hey, you know, Steve, we talk every time about, usually it's about something you can do for yourself personally. And this is one where you need to look out around your circle of friends and around your family. Because there's more than one victim here. The victim who has death by suicide is one, but the family and friends they leave behind is another. So make sure that if you have anybody like that, reach out and get them some help.
And happy birthday in advance, because the next time we'll talk to you, you will be that 1 year older. Do you want to say what the birthday this is? Do you want to mention it?
No. No.
You want me to give people a range of what it might be?
Like, yeah, right.
Okay, he's between 40 and 80.
It's a big birthday for both me and brother David. So his birthday was last week, and then my birthday and my brother. You know, Kurt and I are born on the same day, 2 years apart. Mm-hmm. So we have three birthdays here coming up to celebrate.
Milestone, big time. And, boy, I'll tell you what, you look fabulous. You're really taking great care of yourself, and I see you at least a couple good years for you yet.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
Thank you, my friend.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
Dr. Kevin Most. Again, those notes go up at the podcast, which will go up in just a matter of moments. The news next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
/7:14, raining on Michigan Avenue, wherever you are, maybe the same, right? Foggy, sort of weird Monday morning. Feels like a Monday morning. You know, it looks like a Monday morning. It's kind of got that gray thing going on. We expect this to be typical summer weather throughout the week, where it'll be 80 and 85 and 90 and humid, and a thunderstorm might happen every afternoon. Hmm. So, Florida weather, Dave, that's what it is.
We like
Florida
that.
Weather.
I mean, I like that.
It's totally fine.
Yeah.
totally fine. No issues. Governor Pat Quinn is here. Governor, you know, I've known you for, I don't know, 20 years or longer. You have never looked more fit. Most guys, when they get out of their regular gig, get fat and sit around. What are you doing?
Well, I pass petitions. You know, I run around gathering signatures of a clipboard. You know, keeps you going. And I like doing that. You meet a lot of people you don't really
know. How could you meet? Come on. There's no one in Illinois you don't already know. There's one person in Illinois that you don't already know.
13 million people in Illinois. So, you know, they keep coming. More the better. You know, I was at a gathering yesterday that honored our first responders at St. Juliana Church, and they had a pancake breakfast afterwards. And, you know, I went table to table after eating and got a lot of signatures for our petition to have a term limit referendum in Chicago. We want to put a question on the ballot that voters can vote on and whether or not the mayor should be limited to two terms.
Binding referendum or
binding?
Yeah. Binding referendum. Okay.
Make that very clear. Under the Illinois Constitution, interpreted by the Supreme Court last year, citizens in every municipality in Illinois have the right to put a binding referendum, meaning that if the voters vote for it, it's
done.
The law.
So,
in Chicago is the only big city in America. Out of the 10 largest cities in our country, Chicago is the only one that doesn't have a term limit on the mayor.
Is the mayor term limits piece for the entire state?
Well, you can do it state.
But would the referendum cover the entire state?
No, it's just Chicago.
But how's that legal? How's it legal to just be Chicago?
Well, the Illinois Constitution is a local government article, and it says for people in each municipality, they can use initiative petition to put questions on their municipal ballot. We'd vote on this on November 6th. Before the...
But it would be a Cook County vote or a
city
of Chicago?
Just
city
of Chicago. You know, when we're gathering signatures, I have to ask people, do you live in the city of Chicago or you're registered? And so, you know, we need to get 50,000 more signatures. The deadline is 8 weeks from today. August 6th, in order to put it on November 6th ballot. And if voters vote in favor of the two-term limit on the mayor's office, that means the incumbent can't run in 2019.
Governor Quinn, you've spent your life in government. Why now? Why a term limit push for the city of Chicago and the mayor's office now?
Well, I've always been for term limits. I came out for that, I think, in 1988. And we've done other petition drives, including at the state level, to put a term limit on the legislators. It was called Eight is Enough. It was back in 1994, and we gathered enough signatures, and the Supreme Court back then for state legislators said in a 4-3 decision that we lost that we couldn't put it on the ballot. But just last year, the Illinois Supreme Court said when it comes to municipalities and limiting the mayor to whatever number of terms, and we're saying two terms is enough, the Supreme Court said that is crystal clear that we have the right to do it, and that's what we're doing.
So people are going to ask, do you have an axe to grind with Rahm Emanuel, or is this a concern about the job?
No, I don't really have an axe to grind with him or anyone else. I believe in the principle. I think the ultimate campaign finance reform is putting a reasonable term limit on incumbents. We have a term limit for president of 8 years, and I think the same principle should apply for mayors and, for that matter, governors. And, you know, if anybody...
Well, we have one for governors.
No, we don't. No.
We do based on how the first four went.
Different. Yeah, putting it in the Constitution, or in the case of Chicago, putting it in the city charter, that the voters by referendum, petition and referendum.
Binding referendum. Yeah. State. What about the state legislature? Because Mike Madigan's
for that. We tried that in 1994, and I think 8 is enough there. And if we had won that case, we lost 8, like I said, 4-3, Illinois would be a different state.
But here's the thing. You have had a wonderful career as a civil servant. Should civil servant as a job title be a career, or should it be a period of time?
Well, the founding fathers who started our country and our democracy said it should be rotation of office. No one should be in office too long. King George in England was on the throne for 59 years.
Right.
He couldn't believe that George Washington voluntarily limited his term in office to 8 years, two terms. And, you know, have you seen the play Hamilton? George Washington is quite a great man, because he understood that democracy depended on voluntary term limits by those who were in office.
I want to make sure I understand your position on this. Mm-hmm. You're saying term limits per job. You could leave the job you're in and run for another job in government.
Right. You know, that's actually what happened in
your career.
Of our country. Well, it depends on what you're running for. You know, the voters decide if you're elected or not. But I think that's the point. We're trying to give voters voters in Chicago the right to set the rules for the mayor rather than the mayor ruling us. And, you know, if anybody wants more information about this.
Yeah, where do they go?
All right. It's called TakeChargeChicago.org. That's our website, TakeChargeChicago.org. But our phone number is 773 area code, and it's 999-2016.
Are you
got to get petition passers. We need help. Volunteers.
How many people you have been working with you now?
Well, I mean, lots of people, you know, want to help out. But that's the ultimate of democracy, where everyday people gather signatures on a petition and use their clipboard or whatever they want to get those names. That really, that grassroots democracy is the heart and soul of America.
Well, let me play devil's advocate in the sense that we've seen mayors in Chicago have long terms. We've seen both Mayor Daley's, of course. But isn't there something to be said when you're dealing with this kind of government now in 2018, where you have to deal with contracts and police unions and pension payouts and all the things you have to do, that possibly you need more than the time that's allotted to do that? Or are we going to be in a vicious cycle where every 8 years we have to reset?
Well, 8 is enough, I think, if you can't deal with those issues. Look at the school board. I believe an elected school board in Chicago. I live in Chicago. And, you know, this mayor hasn't done a very good job with the school board and all the scandals they've had there. So, you know, I think 8 is too much sometimes. And, you know, the bottom line is the office does not belong to the mayor. It belongs to the public. And if the public wants to set rules, and Steve and Jordan, in Illinois, 21 different communities already have put term limits on their mayor.
But you have to have the public care enough to get involved.
They are. You know, that's why I've appealed to people to call our phone number at 773-999-2016.
People right now, get off your behinds and turn out.
Sign the petition.
30%
pass it.
Yeah. 30% voter turnout in the primary this year, and that was twice what we had in Cook County last time.
Yeah. No, I think it's very important. If you're going to have a democracy, the people have to take charge. And that's the whole idea of our group, TakeChargeChicago.org. If you don't like what's going on, if you don't like the tax system, if you find that violence is just too much, or you don't like the way the schools are run, the best way to send the message is, in my opinion, put a term limit on the mayor and let him know that the voters are going to call the shots and no one else.
More with Governor Quinn here in just a second, and he's going to run laps around the studio and try to get people to sign.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Don't let me down. That steady old Chevy has seen me happy and seen me sad. We cruised through a lot of good times and rolled out the bad. It'll never see a for sale sign as long as I'm around. Your friends may come and friends may go, but that Chevy don't let me down.
Win yourself the 2018 Centennial Edition Chevy Silverado. Have you sat in it yet?
I have.
Justin Cuffin?
No. No one lets me sit in cars.
It's fabulous.
Is it?
Oh, tremendous. Let me read you some reviews. These are just Silverado reviews from actual human beings, Silverado owners. Most impressive truck I ever drove. I need this truck. 1500 Silverado crew cab, great truck for work. And when you're done working, to go home and pick up the kids. This truck has quite a few bells and whistles, makes it great to drive. And how about this? I hadn't thought about this. The smooth ride, unusual for a truck this big and this powerful. Great for a guy with a bad back. Another one, very nice upgraded Silverado. I got a 97. That's right, a 97. I just upgraded. I'm looking for 20 more years from this one. Excellent features and options. Another Chevy review. Much more for your money compared to other brands. Solid construction and reliable. Second Silverado I've purchased, and I'm staying in the family. Edgar writes, I've been hunting for this truck for a while now. Fulfills all of my needs. Really, Edgar? All of them?
All of them.
Let's see.
A lot of needs.
Bailey writes, I love this truck. It's very safe. No worries with my family inside. And anonymous review, I absolutely love this truck. Purchased the Midnight Edition. Love the 8-speed transmission. Shifting and pickup's amazing. Handles awesome. Love, love, love it.
Yeah, it's a robot.
And yeah, you can tell by the ad-lib. And finally, somebody from Flushing, New York. Great truck for the money. I love the crew cab space for passengers, room for handling cargo. The love continues for the Chevy Silverado. Sabre, come in here and tell everybody how they are going to get involved in the contest. And I'm a little surprised, by the way, Dave, that Sandberg hasn't stolen the truck yet.
I am, too.
Was that just nonsense? Were you making it up when you said you're going to get to drive it?
Oh, no. They said I could, so
well, when
I'm
are you
going
to drive it?
I'm not sure, but it would have been helpful for taking stuff out of our basement from the water we had this this weekend.
I don't think we're going to put your nasty wet carpet in the back of the truck that we're giving away.
Yeah, because it has that bed lining. So
no.
That's what
No. You're going out on a nice little joy ride to someplace nice. You're not putting crappy carpet in the back.
We're going to Lake Geneva this weekend, and it would be perfect for me to take Catherine and her friends.
There you go.
You can go to WGNradio.com/contests. And also, if you see a Silverado on the road, if you could text us or email
us. Oh, yeah, we're taking your picture. Silverado spotters.
I have a gallery going, and in that gallery is a Silverado you saw, Mary Vandevelt's husband's, Steve's Silverado. Those trucks are amazing.
Mary's concerned that Steve, her husband, likes the Silverado better than her.
That's true.
Yeah, I would.
Not concerned, I know.
If that Centennial Blue Silverado was in my garage, it would be... It'd be hard to choose between it and my husband as
well. Can you see a full hostage situation? We got a SWAT team outside of the garage just trying to get Sandberg to give up the keys.
Oh, I love that car.
It's pretty great. Pretty great. Are those, and check and see if the videos are up from Hamp and Lou Manfredini and me. It's ChevyDriveChicago.com. At 7:30, Governor Quinn's here. We only got a couple minutes left, Governor. But what happens if Rahm Emanuel puts a court challenge up to this and finds a way to stall it beyond Election Day?
The Illinois Supreme Court several times recently in Franklin Park and Country Club Hills, as well as in Broadview in the appellate court as well, have held that this is a right that the people have, and the mayor cannot make himself immune from the Constitution of Illinois.
But we are talking about the courts here, the courts that have shut down many a thing that the public wanted discussed here, including gerrymandering questions and everything else. So doesn't he have a legal option to pull this off?
Well,
if he chooses to.
Yeah, well, I think you ought to let the people decide. And term limits on the mayor, they've done it in New York. They've done it in Los Angeles, Houston, Philadelphia, all the big cities in America. And we ought to have the same right in Chicago. And we have a constitutional right to do it if we get those signatures. We need to get 100,000 signatures by August 6th. So that's what we're doing. We have 8 weeks from today.
And you're halfway there.
Names. We're halfway there. We have over 50,000. And we got to keep on petitioning. And that's the ultimate of American democracy. People passing petitions and signing their name on and using clipboards to have grassroots democracy.
You've spent your life, though, in government. You know this. You've been a public servant, a civil servant in many different ways. And a lot of people say that the public decides how many terms, not term limits, that the public goes to the voting booth and they make the choice. Why put a limit? Why put something on paper that says you can only be in this office for a certain amount of time?
Well, I'd say, Justin, the number one problem right now is too much money in politics. We're going to see that in Illinois, huge amounts of money. And when the incumbents have huge amounts of money, it's very hard for challengers, competitors to be able to have an even contest. And that's one of the reasons why term limits are so popular. The president has a term limit. Most mayors have term limits in our country, and I think it's at least we ought to give voters in Chicago a chance to vote in this issue.
Any chance Madigan's going to get in the way of this?
I doubt it. You know, I don't.
What happens if Mike Madigan calls you and says, "Pat, I've known you forever. Shut this down."
Absolutely, I won't listen to that. You know, I believe in. I'm here at WGN. Our first petition drive was to stop politicians, including Mike Madigan, from collecting their entire salary for a whole year on the first day of office.
Yep.
Wally Phillips was our champion,
right.
And then we did Citizen Utility Board. Bob Collins was our champion, and we did recall.
Are you pitching for me to hook you up with this? Start marching with you. Come on,
recall,
man.
Call with Spike O'Dell, and here's Steve Cochran with term limits on the mayor of Chicago.
This well, is he WGN set me up beautifully, tradition. Didn't he? All right, again, give him the website.
Okay, the website is takechargechicago.org. You can download a petition, learn all about it. If you want to phone call us, it's 773 area code 999-2016. And Steve Cochran, he's the best there ever was.
Yes, and he's not just saying that because he wants me to champion this as well. Anyway, thank you for the work you're doing.
Okay.
And what are you
going to
run for again? You going to tell me?
I like what I'm doing now.
Okay.
Voting on issues as well as candidates.
Is there any chance you'll run for a public office again?
I doubt it. You know, I've had my opportunities, but it was a privilege being governor, you know, and, you know, it's important. I think all of us, you know, the listeners, take good care of those who have borne the battle. And I do a lot of work now with service members and veterans and military families.
Oh, I know you do. You've always been a leader in that regard. All right. We're completely out of time, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this question. Are you for or against the commutation of Rod Blagojevich's sentence?
I am not for that. I did a lot of clemencies when I was governor, more than any other in governor's history, 5,000 clemency cases. But I would never give a clemency if someone didn't express an apology or remorse or say they're sorry for what crimes they committed. And he hasn't done that.
Well said. Thank you, Governor Quinn. Back with your headlines in a second. And then Ryan Nobles will tell us exactly what's going to happen in 11 hours, 10 and a half now, in Singapore when Kim Jong-un meets Donald J. Trump. That's right. The fate of the free world is in the hands of those two at 8 o'clock tonight. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, the breaking news, again, is that the White House is saying the president's definitely coming back tomorrow, our time. It could be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning overnight, our time, when he's already on Air Force One coming home. So what does that mean for the talks to end the nuclear threat on the Asian Peninsula? Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us now. Ryan, what do we know about that? I mean, the only way I can read into it is that there's been enough pre-negotiation going on that this is going to be nothing but a get-to-know-you meeting.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing that we know for sure, if we just go by the president's public statements, what he said was that, I mean, the expectations that he set was that if these negotiations went well, that they could extend for 2, 3, 4 days. So the fact that before the meetings have even started, that the president is now saying that he's going to be ready to take off basically about 24 hours after the initial meeting takes place would indicate that perhaps they don't expect big breakthroughs to take place. But the other thing I'd say, Steve, is, you know, Donald Trump is the master of setting and lowering and raising expectations. This may all just be a part of a grand plan to make everyone think that they don't have something on the table and that he's going to make a quick exit, and then all of a sudden he's going to announce some sort of grand bargain and stay for a week. So
it's a great idea. Great point, I should say.
With the president's schedule, we always use it as just guidance. It's never the rule, for sure.
The other part of the story this morning that seems odd to me is that he and Kim Jong-un will sit down first. Again, it's 8 o'clock Chicago time tonight. For 2 hours with just the two of them and interpreters. That seems insane to me. I, in any normal meeting where you're just meeting someone, I don't know why it would go down that way.
Well, and also, it's kind of interesting that he feels the need to sit down with him for 2 hours when he's been bragging for about a week and a half that he's going to know within the first 5 minutes whether or not he's got this guy figured out. You know, this, I think, might be part of the theatrics, I think, from both sides. Both of these world leaders want to make it seem as though they're the ones that are in control of the situation. So the idea that they would meet without advisors, without staff around them, only interpreters, to a certain extent puts a lot of pressure on both of them as well, because whatever comes out of this is going to fall directly on their shoulders. But that seems to be what they both want. They want the expectation that if a deal is hatched, it's going to be because these two guys worked it out. The obvious risk there is if it all falls apart, then we know who to blame.
Ryan, I'm interested because regardless of what happens, and obviously everyone's paying attention to be able to criticize both parties if it falls apart, it's very historic that these two leaders have come together. This is the first time that there has been any face-to-face since, you know, after the Korean War. What does it mean for America, but also for North Korea, that this is happening and tonight, and this is something that hasn't happened in 50 years?
Well, I think definitively, Justin, what we can say is that Kim Jong-un has an enormous victory by this summit even happening. If no negotiations are made, if no breakthrough takes place, the fact that a North Korean leader is able to sit across the table from a leader of the United States of America shows that North Korea is being taken seriously on the world stage. That's something that the Kim dynasty has longed for since the Korean War came to an end. They've not been taken seriously at all on the world stage. It wasn't until their new nuclear proliferation that some of these foreign leaders even paid any attention to them at all. So this is a big victory for Kim. It's a big victory for him with his people in North Korea as well, to try and convince them that this mythology around the Kim dynasty continues, that he was able to bring the president of the United States to the table. In terms of Donald Trump, this is where he's going to try and make the argument that he's the ultimate deal maker. And what Donald Trump's been saying over and over again is that, yeah, nobody else took this risk of sitting down face to face with a North Korean dictator because none of them have the deal making ability that I have. And I'm going to be able to break through where other past world leaders have not. Now, that's interesting that he's saying that based off the disaster that was the G7 that he just left in Canada.
Right. Which we'll get to in a second.
Right now, there isn't a ton of evidence that the president's deal-making, at least as president, is working out all that well.
Yeah, and there may be an advantage to have the lunatic Kim Jong-un think that our leader is a lunatic. And I'm not even kidding when I say that, because if he is suitably afraid that he can't figure out Donald Trump, that may be a positive in the continuing bizarro world we live in.
Well, to a certain extent, there's some argument to be made that Donald Trump's crazy like a fox foreign policy has some benefits to it. That and maybe that even is part of what we saw play out at the G7, that these world leaders are so afraid of what Donald Trump is capable of that they'll capitulate to his demands because the alternative is much worse. And you're right about that. I think that maybe Kim Jong-un goes into this situation thinking that I'm not the one capable of doing something dramatic in this situation. Maybe the guy sitting across the table from me is willing to do something just as dramatic. And he's threatened that before, right? He's talked about how his nuclear button is much bigger, and he's called Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man. So, yeah, it's kind of almost a staring contest to a certain extent with both these guys. Who's willing to do the thing that's a little bit crazier and maybe kind of an idea of mutually assured destruction makes them come up with some sort of resolution?
Justin, can you imagine if World War III starts over an argument about whether or not size matters?
It's probably it wouldn't be the first time.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Ryan, I'm interested, too, because South Korea is a big player in this. There was talk of the president having a phone call.
China.
And of course, China, Japan. So the idea of these two countries coming together, these two leaders to talk about this really is a first step, because you're going to have to convince your allies and, of course, North Korea's allies for whatever actually gets put on the table.
There's no doubt about that, Justin. And I really think, and Steve and I have talked about this for months, one of the big reasons that this summit has even taken place is because of the will of the South Korean people. President Moon has been hell-bent on this idea of reunification with North Korea, or at least normalizing relations. And his approval rating in South Korea now is sky high, something like 80%, and it's because he's been willing to take these dramatic steps. He's crossed the DMZ. He's embraced Kim Jong-un. That was something that, probably 10 years ago, South Koreans thought they'd never see. So I think that's the big first step, South Korea being our most important ally in that region. But Xi Jinping also plays an enormously important role in all of this. And I think there was some sense that perhaps the Chinese president was being left out of these negotiations at one point. That's why you saw, after that secret meeting with Mike Pompeo and Kim Jong-un, you saw Kim Jong-un take that secret trip into Beijing and meet with Xi Jinping, because let's be honest, to a certain extension, the North Koreans are just an appendage of the Chinese. Right. The only reason that they've even been able to exist is because of China. So they play an important role, too. And then Japan, you know, Shinzo Abe, he's really concerned about all of this. I mean, they still see Korea as an enemy, and they have very kind of uncomfortable relationships with the South Koreans as well. So Abe is definitely concerned about how this all plays out. I mean, there's the implications for this region and then the rest of the world are just enormous. You cannot emphasize enough how important this meeting is.
The G7 and hating your neighbors. How big a deal is this? We'll come back and talk about that.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
It's important for you to know what. What am I doing? Tell me what I'm doing. Tell me what I'm doing.
We're just back with Ryan
Nobles.
We're
back. Every once in a while, Uncle Steve loses his place. Before I pick up the phone with Ryan Nobles, I want to play a couple pieces of sound for you. Now, I want you to listen carefully. Justin, Dave, listen carefully.
Okay.
Tell me how offended you are by this. It's the end of the G7 meeting. You're the host country. You're Canada. You're Justin Perfect Hair Trudeau. And you got to make a statement. Things have been a little tense behind the scenes. But this whole tax us to death thing coming from the United States because we tax you to death, do we really have to fight? Here's Justin Trudeau.
I'm happy to announce that we've released a joint communique
by all seven countries. The president will continue to say what he says at various occasions. What we did this weekend was come together, roll up our sleeves, and figure out consensus language that we could all agree to. Now, I know you'll know that we had some strong, firm conversations on trade and specifically American tariffs. I reiterated to President Trump that these tariffs threaten to harm industry and workers on both sides of our border. I stand ready to work closely with the president to resolve this dispute swiftly, but as I have consistently said, I will always protect Canadian workers and Canadian interests.
What a lunatic! Whoa, is he out of line?
Special place in hell.
Here you go, Peter Navarro, Trump's advisor. Trump's trade advisor, Peter Navarro, off Air Force One and on the Sunday morning talk shows yesterday.
There's a special place in hell for any foreign leader that engages in bad faith diplomacy with President Donald J. Trump.
What? Ryan Nobles rejoins us from CNN. What, Ryan? What happened there? What did I miss?
You know, it's funny. I was covering the G7 from Washington on Saturday, and I watched all these press conferences by these foreign leaders after the G7 ended, including the one by President Trump. And if you were just to watch both President Trump's speech and Prime Minister Trudeau's speech in a vacuum without knowing anything about kind of the lingering issues of resentment around it, it seemed to me that the one that was being a heck of a lot more critical about the situation was President Trump than Prime Minister Trudeau. I mean, he emphasized the fact that the Canadian people are polite and reasonable. So the idea that that led President Trump into such a tizzy on Air Force One heading to Singapore that he decided not to sign this communique, the first time that's ever happened in the history of the G7, is just really startling, because what does Trudeau's comments have to do with the language of that statement? Everyone said that there were obviously differences in these conversations over the past couple of days, but they had a conversation, they figured out language that everyone felt comfortable with. There was nothing that Justin Trudeau said in those statements afterwards that changed the language in that statement. To me, this just shows that President Trump got mad
right. That
Justin Trudeau might have showed him up a little bit, so this was the only option he had at his disposal. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
But how is the leader of Canada not allowed to say, I'll always put the interests of Canada first? How is that not an okay statement, Justin?
No, I agree, Ryan. Obviously, if the president is taking back the fact that he's going to sign this communique, there's something that happened behind the scenes where he feels is in complete contrast. And he even said that on Twitter, this idea that you say things behind the closed doors.
Yeah, but you're ascribing logic.
Yeah, I am trying to logic, but I can understand. I guess the American people and everyone who has involved in this just doesn't see that on their TV sets
doesn't
on
add
Sunday.
Up.
It doesn't add up, but what could it be?
I don't think that it had anything to do with the conversations they had behind closed doors. I think the decision that the president made to pull out of the communique was 100% the kind of viral sensation that took place after Justin Trudeau made those comments. His exact quote was, you know, Canadians are polite and reasonable, but we will not be pushed around. And I can tell you, like, 1,000 people tweeted it. I tweeted it. And my Twitter feed's not that impressive, but it has over 15,000 likes on my one Twitter account. So I think what happened was that those comments just skyrocketed around the world. And, you know, the president was sitting on Air Force One without anything to do but watch cable news. And I think he saw how this was resonating around the country, and he did not want to be one-upped by Justin Trudeau. So that's why he came out and made that statement. And it wasn't just Trudeau. And, you know, Emmanuel Macron had some pretty similar statements that were just as tough about how, you know, we've agreed to this kind of very narrow set of parameters for the communique, but we made it clear to President Trump that we were not going to back down on these trade issues. You know, what President Trump sold to the American people was that he was going to go into this G7 meeting with these tariffs at his back and use that as a negotiating tactic to create better deals as it relates to trade, as it relates to NAFTA. And what it appears to me is that we're on the verge of a global trade war, and both of these sides are waiting to see who's going to blink first. And it seems pretty clear to me that all these European Union countries and Canada have kind of unified that they aren't going to blink anytime soon. So it's going to be Donald Trump that's going to have to go through with it, and who knows what the outcome is going to be.
Here's the deal. Trump's not wrong about the upside-down part of some of our trade. We actually have a trade surplus with Canada. When you put everything in, there's a trade surplus, and it's significant. But he's not wrong about cars. He's not wrong about dairy. But there's a way to strike a better deal than to come out screaming about your best friend, your neighbor. This is like, I got two jerks at work that my wife hates, but I want to go hang out with them while I trash the guy that lives next door. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, and also, Steve, I think it's...
And by the way, the jerks at work are Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin, in case you were wondering where the analogy was going.
Yeah. But I also think it's important to look... if you just look at the raw number of this is the tariff that this country puts in place on us versus the tariff that we put on place to the country with their goods that come in, that is such a surface level argument about trade in the global community. You know, these countries could level heavy, heavy tariffs on goods coming from our side and not the other way around, but the cost of producing goods in those countries is so much cheaper that America still ends up ahead of the game. And, you know, Ben Sasse, the Nebraska senator, who's a Republican, a Trump critic, he made this point over the weekend that the current trade policies that exist in this world have led to an enormous economic boom in the United States for the past 50 years. The idea that our economy has been sunk by these tariffs is just a fallacy. We're better when we are able to trade and negotiate with our counterparts.
And don't mess with Canada because we need them. Last word, Justin.
I wonder what this means. What's the next step here, Ryan? I mean, do we see what kind of tariffs are going to be placed on United States goods?
Yeah, that's going to be the next stage. I mean, there's no way that Donald Trump's going to back down. So you're going to see, I think, these countries make good on their promise to hike their tariffs up. And you want to know what the answer is, Justin? Every one of us is going to end up paying more for the goods that we buy and sell every single day. It's just going to be a more expensive economy if this trade war continues.
Including hockey pucks. The price of pucks is about to go through the roof. Ugh.
Sky high.
Ryan, thank you, my friend. Talk to you later.
Thank you, guys. Have a good week.
Add Ryan Nobles on social media all over the news next. Then Dean, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me good.
Justin Kaufman's here, Pete's here, Joe's here, Sandberg's here. Here's Steve Grzanich, David Jennings, Mary Vandeville. We got 48 people now hanging out, which is nothing but good. Good morning, Dean.
You're going to have to move to a bigger studio soon.
Maybe a new one, one that smells like new studio.
Nothing like new studio smell.
You might remember the end of, what was the Ricky Bobby?
Talladega Nights.
Where there were some outtakes. Well, it turns out for real, Dean, now packs of wild wolves have taken over the Tribune Tower.
What is that?
What? Why am I hearing you?
I don't know.
I'm hearing you congratulate someone. What was that? Are you doing some weird ventriloquist act now? What are you doing?
That was a video clip that accidentally got started.
Okay. So anyway, thank God this is a rehearsal.
I just love that you're watching yourself. That's the part.
These interviews aren't going to edit themselves here.
This is why we call it Moron Entertainment, sponsored by brand new Smile Dental Implant Center.
They're happy they spent the money.
Springsteen at the Tonys, a cool surprise at the Tonys, or two De Niro's got a potty mouth. Winners and losers, oh my, Vince Vaughn. Oh, come on, man. You got to be smarter than that. And details on the first Bond girl and the wonderful life she led. All that coming up. Anything you want to add about your weekend before we go to break here?
No, just the average weekend for me in Hawaii.
This is why I asked him to bring it up, because this is, if you can get Dean's gig, get it. Because, sure, you got to ask a lot of empty-headed celebrities questions.
A lot of dopey encounters.
But sometimes you're going to get an email or a call that says, Dean, we need you to fly to Hawaii for a day.
Literally.
It wasn't even a full day, was it?
I think I was on the airplane longer than I was on the ground there.
Wow.
What
Not
island?
That I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah,
I was on Oahu. Oahu, and we interviewed the cast of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, where they shot much of this movie on this beautiful, tropical, wild, super muddy-filled area.
Was there much talk of the volcano problem?
On the local news, there was. That's all people were talking about, but there was no effect otherwise at all. You didn't notice.
None of the Oahu volcanoes were going off?
Nothing was exploding in Oahu until I had that spicy bean dip.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, it wasn't for Dean. 8:19, more in a moment.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard.
Back to Dean live at Channel 9.
I got an email from Andrea this morning.
Yeah, how's she doing? Loving her trip?
She's in Mykonos right now.
Yeah, this is
on the island of Mykonos.
Week two of the extravaganza. Now, you've been over there. Have you been to Mykonos?
I've been to Mykonos several times.
And what is special about Mykonos?
It's beautiful, and it's gorgeous, and it's delicious.
Yes.
And it's the party island. You go to Mykonos, that's the party island with the bars and the nightclubs and, you know, wild nightlife.
So it's Cozumel.
Yeah.
If you go to Cancun, it's Cozumel.
Yeah, I would think that's about right. And she said that
I think if you go to Cancun is Cancun, the party place.
Is it? Not so much anymore. You got to go to Cozumel still to guarantee you're drunk.
Yeah. Dean, was the email in English or Greek?
It was in English.
Okay.
Would have been more entertaining if it was
she
Greek.
Didn't feel the need to put it in special secret Greek code.
In all of the Greek, you probably don't know this, Justin, but all Greek email ends with Oprah! Right? Am I right about that?
Oprah, I believe it's.
What is it?
Oprah.
Oh, boy, I got to make a note of that.
Oprah.
All right, Tony's winners and losers.
The big winner last night was this incredible musical that is called The Band's Visit. This beat out Mean Girls the musical, SpongeBob the musical, and Frozen the musical. This is based on a 2007 movie about an Egyptian band that gets lost and gets stranded in a small Israeli village. And, you know, it's the first time that these Arabs are confronted with these Israelis. And
is it a true story?
Learn from each other. I don't know if it's a true story or not.
It's a good story.
I hope that it would be. The people are trying to get along. It's a very touching story with beautiful, beautiful music and choreography. It won 10 Tony Awards last night, including Best Musical. The Best Director for a Musical was a Chicagoan who grew up in Skokie, Illinois, went to Columbia College, also taught at
David Cromer.
Columbia College, David Cromer.
Thanks for bailing Dean out because he was Googling that as fast as he could.
He's a big deal.
I'm going through my notes.
It's pretty amazing
notes
to see how many Chicago. Tina Landau did SpongeBob.
Who's the guy that you
David
know?
Cromer. Rob Coulson is a longtime producer in Chicago. He was a producer on A Band's Visit. So a big, big night for Chicago people.
Do you get a Tony because you know that guy?
No.
That'd be cool. You could put it next to your Pulitzer. What's the other award you won?
I won a James Beard Award.
Oh, a James Beard Award. That's what it was.
It's not a
title. I won a Nobel Prize.
Laurie Metcalf also was...
I don't want to talk about
it. In the Chicago area, Laurie Metcalf won Best Featured Performer in a play. She's in Three Tall Women.
Did she say anything about Roseanne?
She did not say anything about Roseanne in her...
Because that would have been great if that would have been her acceptance
speech. If that's all she would have talked about.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Any surprise losers?
No. I think, honestly, I think everything sort of went the way that it was supposed to win.
What did De Niro do?
Harry Potter, first of all, won Best Play. That's significant. Best Revival of a Play was Angels in America. Best Revival of a Musical, Once on This Island. Of the performances, I mean, they had performances from all the big shows. But Bruce Springsteen came out, you know, since last October, he's been on Broadway doing this one-man show, which you pay like over $1,000 to get a single
Can't get a ticket. Hottest ticket since
right
Hamilton.
Now. Yeah. It's actually a hotter ticket than Hamilton right at the moment. But he came out and did his song My Hometown, which was amazing. But introducing Bruce Springsteen was Robert De Niro, who came out on stage, dropped the F-bomb several times in referring to the President of the United States. De Niro has been an outspoken critic of the President, and he held nothing back last night. And the crowd went wild. It was the loudest, longest standing ovation of the whole night. Someone online this morning is suggesting that De Niro should get a Pulitzer Prize for the statement that he made last night. Other people are saying how disgusting it was. So that was the most political moment
part,
of the night.
Yeah, I was going to say part of the course, right? For
yeah, part
post
of
award show.
Yeah, so I mean there was I would say more than political talk. People just talked about the discourse in the country right now and how we need to come together. A lot of people talked about gun violence. Last night, that's been plaguing the country.
Which led to this really cool moment.
Yeah, well, that's a part of the moment. It was a surprise moment when the drama department, entire drama department from the Douglas School.
Yeah, the Stoneman Douglas, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland.
They honored the teacher that protected the students, and then the students wanted to just come to the Tony Awards. Instead, they were invited to come and perform on stage.
And here's that clip.
Seasons of love. Seasons of love. It's time now to sing out, though the story never ends. Let's celebrate, remember, here in the life of friends. Remember
the love. You know, Dean, there's a
not a dry eye in the house.
No, it was tremendous.
During this performance.
There's a point, Dean, where this girl here, she's a little 5 foot tall white girl, and she went all Aretha Franklin on the thing. She was tremendous.
Killing it, yeah. She was absolutely amazing. That was one of the best performances of the night. Springsteen was amazing when he performed last night. They had My Fair Lady, and they had Carousel and SpongeBob the Musical that got its world premiere start here in Chicago. So I thought it was a great performance. And Josh Groban and Sarah Bareilles, I thought they did a very delightful job hosting last
night. Dean, I didn't see it. Who won for best longest play?
Play that you wish you hadn't bought tickets for?
I did not see that category.
Harry Potter or Angels in America.
Those are the two. There were a couple of references to shows that take 6 hours to watch.
Vince Vaughn arrested?
DUI over the weekend in Manhattan Beach, California.
I thought it was a DWI.
Same thing. Driving well under the influence, It just matters where you are.
So not only is he charged with drinking while under the influence, but
driving while under the influence. drinking got him under the influence.
Drinking, I guess that would be the consequence.
Yeah.
But apparently also charged with resisting arrest. And it wasn't an easy stop. I don't have the details of what happened, but the charges imply that both Vince and the passenger in the car were kind of confrontational.
Who was the passenger?
With the police. They didn't say.
They haven't said yet. My sister says she would definitely be an unruly passenger if I was getting arrested for DWI.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah, never drive her anywhere.
We discussed
that. Not that you should actually be arrested for that.
She would be unruly?
She would be. She already knows. And she said, especially if I was drinking. So she already knows she'd be unruly even if she wasn't drinking.
Well, then she should never be in a car again.
She's
ever.
Defensive of
Am
me.
Am I the only one that hopes that the unruly passenger was Jon Favreau and they were doing this their bit together?
Like a throwback.
Thing.
Yeah. Yes. I love Vince. He's a pal. Has been for years, but it's a dumb thing to do. And I'm sure he recognizes that this morning.
I'm sure he's very...
And what about the first Bond girl?
Her name was Eunice Gayson. She played Sylvia Trench in Dr. No and From Russia with Love.
Dave dated her in high school.
In the early 60s.
That's true.
Well, our sympathy to you then, our condolences. She was 90 years old, passed away over the weekend. You know, being the first Bond girl is one thing, but she is also the first person to whom Sean Connery said, Bond, James Bond.
Oh, is that right?
First time those words were ever uttered were to her.
She made a wicked kale sandwich. All right, Sandberg, what do you got for Dean?
Dean, one thing that was left off your list is the whole entire cast of Felicity
was together this weekend at the ATX Television Festival in Austin.
How did I miss that?
The 20th anniversary of Felicity is this fall.
How did I miss the big Felicity news?
And they were all together. It was a WB show.
I know.
It's quite, honestly, could be argued as the greatest show the WB ever put out.
It could be argued.
The cast of Dawson's Creek just called and said that they disagree.
I was going to say, I don't know that that list is that long, but...
Carrie Russell.
I love Carrie Russell.
Brilliant.
I love Carrie Russell.
When she first kissed Ben, the chairs creaking as they leaned in for that first kiss is one of the most romantic things I've ever seen on television.
Is that right? Look
when
at you.
When she cut her hair... That was, like, heard around the world. Remember when she chopped off her long curls?
That's when I started shaving my head. Same time.
Nick DiGilio was furious when that happened.
He was
in love with her.
DUI, driving under the influence. DWI, driving while intoxicated.
Okay.
So I was incorrect.
The first report was DWI when he was at one of those checkpoints.
Right, but listen to this, Dean. Here's a definition of it. Delayed reaction times, blurred vision, dizziness or fainting, sleepiness, inability to focus, nausea, tremors, and delusion. That's me every morning.
Yeah.
All of those things.
I haven't had a single drink, and I have that
same
every day.
Same here. Talk to you later.
See ya.
That's Dean, and we're back with the headlines. And then Joe's got his Monday trivia question. You, Mr. Sox fan.
Yeah.
You can play along with one of our listeners, you and Dave, to see if you can help him win.
I called it. 2 of 3 in Boston.
That's not the question. Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
845. Hi. How are you? I'm Steve. You know who you are. That's Justin Kaufman. That's Dave Innitt. On the 7th floor, or I guess it would be the 18th floor. I used to say 7th floor because that's where they were. On the 18th floor of 303 East Wacker is Mary Vandeveld and Steve Grzanich. And we're a week away from leaving the tower for the last time. If all goes as scheduled this week, next Monday morning will be the first show over there.
Yay! And you guys will be right next to me. So excited.
I was thinking about this morning. How close is the bathroom, you know, if I want to just take a stroll?
It's just down the hall.
It's close, as bathrooms go.
You've got to take
it's not that far.
You've got to take your pass with you just in case you get locked out, though.
That's already happened to you?
It has. It is outside the perimeter.
Should there be a bathroom right next to your microphone? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, no. Now, we had a studio upstairs that genius Tom Langmeier put together with a bathroom in studio, which I was always sort of creeped out by.
Well, the worst thing was it had that step and everybody fell over.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was like a 12-inch drop. Yeah.
And the problem with that studio bathroom is that a lot of people tended to go in there to do number two because they thought it was out of
the
way.
Steve.
Well, I'm just saying. You know,
and then, it was only the men. Because they all walked past my window. Believe me,
pretending
only,
they had a mission going somewhere.
It was
newspaper.
Turns
out
they
did. Newspaper under the arm.
Yeah,
never saw a girl go in that bathroom. I never.
Now, having said that, and you know, I hate this topic, but having said that, the 7th floor here, there were women from all over this tower when this tower was full who regularly came to the 7th floor to use the ladies' room. They all looked embarrassed and guilty as they went into the ladies' room on this floor.
You know
not
why?
Just women.
I didn't see men coming down. But
I busted a couple.
You know why the women went in there? They all used it? Because it had two rows of bathrooms. It had two one in back of the next, so the one in back were more private.
Well, listen, we know you have special treatment in the ladies' room anyway. You probably know this. Every ladies' room has a baby grand. You know, and a cocktail bar.
Right.
We have a flaming barrel of trash.
You know, which is really the impetus behind the unisex bathrooms. North Carolina. You know, that was the whole
there
idea.
There is a unisex bathroom in here, by the way.
In the new place?
Yeah, there's one big handicap bathroom that anybody can use, but there's no soap or towels in it yet.
But it's probably not that good for anybody, then.
It is rather brave, though, for you to go to a different floor and create a hazardous material situation.
You just can't
leave.
Help yourself, can you? You know why you can't help yourself? Because you know you're 6 blocks away, I can't choke you from here.
I'll punch myself.
I can't. He's close to me.
He's coming over later, though, Steve.
I want to play a piece of sound for you from last night's Tonys as well, because Josh Groban's a very funny dude. I didn't know Sarah Bareilles was that funny. Do you know Sarah Bareilles?
I know of Sarah Bareilles.
Did you know she was funny? Yeah.
No, I would not. She's a singer, right?
Yes, Grandpa.
Christ.
She's a singer.
Remember the Jesus Christ Superstar that was on TV with John Legend?
Yeah, she's great. She's great.
She did a good job.
They came back from a commercial last night. And keep in mind, every time you've gone to the theater, your mind has wandered at some point. And you fought stuff. Here's what they came back from one break with.
Broadway folk can't get hurt, can't feel anything. If you want to work, you'll push it down. You push it down.
Never out, never sick, don't stop. No holiday meals from your mom's stovetop. You'll see your friends again when the contract ends.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Count the shows again, this can't be right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Who designed the schedule without a weekend? I've got to sing this thing 8 times a week. Sing it 8 times a week.
I want to scream, can't speak. I'm on vocal rest all week.
When the right minds would schedule the plays to be twice in a day, I've got to sing this thing 8 times a week. For dear life,
someone check on my kids and my wife.
Oh dear Broadway, you're out of my league.
Why the hell is this 8 times a week?
Really well done. That's really great. Well done. Mocking themselves, as they should. It's 8:50. We'll take a break, come back, and Super Joe has his White Sox question of the week. Super Joe, you've been researching, you've been thinking, you've been coming up with this all week?
No.
Okay. We'll get back with him on that, and first correct caller with an answer to the White Sox question, going to get the White Sox tickets. Hottest team in baseball. Break up the White Sox. Won 2 of 3 over the Red Sox this weekend.
So hot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, cause you mean that much to me. If you out there,
theme for my prom. 8:55. Super Joe has a White Sox question ready. First correct answer is a winner. You can ask Dave for help. Dave is a legendary sports figure in Chicago. And Justin Coffin, there's no bigger White Sox fan than you.
No, that's not true. There are millions.
There are no bigger White Sox fan than you for the sake of this conversation.
For this conversation.
I'm sorry, Dave, what was that?
Maybe Joe.
Joe's bigger than
Super Joe.
Well, Super Joe's the moderator. Super Joe's asking the question, so he's not even in this particular portion of the situation.
I'm also not listening.
Right, he's not listening. That's the other piece of that that's important as well. All right, the question for White Sox tickets, and this is four to see the White Sox and the Tigers on Father's Day, Sunday at 1:10. You take Dad. Take Dad to the game.
Harold Baines, is that the answer?
That's not the answer. Tune in every Monday at this hour, and you'll have a chance as well. Four tickets. All right, Joe, what's the question?
The White Sox beat former ace Chris Sale 1-0 at Fenway Park on Friday night.
Best game of the year.
The Southsiders acquired
Chris Sale cut up his shirt after the game?
I don't know. I didn't talk to Boston media.
Okay.
The Southsiders acquired a handful of players when they traded Sale to Boston in December of 2016, including second baseman Yoan Moncada and top pitching prospect Michael Kopech. Name the other two prospects they acquired.
Geez. The other two players in the Chris Sale trade. Don't say it out loud. All right, but you can get help from these guys when you call 312-981-7200, and we will come. Do we need a break here? Yes, we do. We'll come back with a winner next on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Jim is in Bedford Park trying to win the Sox tickets. All right, Super Joe, question again.
The White Sox beat their former ace, Chris Sale, 1-0 at Fenway Park on Friday night. The Southsiders acquired a handful of players when they traded Sale to Boston in December of 2016, including starting second baseman Yoan Moncada and top pitching prospect Michael Kopech. Name one of the other two players they acquired.
Shoeless Joe Johnson.
Ron Karkovice.
I was just thinking that name. That was weird.
Jim, do you know the answer?
That's the best White Sox name of all time.
How about Victor Diaz?
Victor Diaz. How about the other?
Alexander Basabe. Louis Alexander Basabe.
Luis Basabe.
Louis Basabe.
Listen, he's reading it off Google. He doesn't have a pronunciation guide. Huh? Is that right, Joe?
Yeah, that's correct.
Congratulations, right, Jim. Are you a father?
I am a father.
You going to take your kids to the game with you?
Yeah, they're Sox fans. I'm a Cubs fan, but I guess I have to take them.
Suck it up, buddy. Family of four for the White Sox and the Tigers. And there is room on the bandwagon. So Luis Alexander Basabe and Victor Diaz, both part of the
Are either of those guys playing into Basabe?
Hold on.
Might be.
Basabe.
No?
What? Mm-hmm. Hold on. What?
Basabe is something you have with sushi,
he's at,
right?
Winston Salem.
Okay, got it.
Don't you have basabe with sushi, right?
Yes, you do.
Right?
Basabe.
They are preparing for the summit right now in Singapore. And I have fascinating, interesting facts about Singapore I can share with you.
Mm.
But let's take a break first and we'll come back. CLTV will join us in just a second. As a matter of fact, I think they joined us already. Good morning. To our friends at CLTV. Also in the 9 o'clock hour still to come, Rhyme Fest and Steve and Johnny. Now, which one are the rappers?
Steve and Johnny. Lil Steve and Lil Johnny.
That's it. Coming up on 720 WGN. Well. How good do you two look?
Thank you.
You look fabulous.
Thank you
very much.
Your glasses on.
Oh, yeah. Stop it. You look great.
In fact, I should explain for the people watching on TV. CLTV, yeah. I'm not trying to do the Roy Orbison thing. Long story short, prognosis is good. I had cataract surgery that turned into more of an adventure than I thought it was going to be.
You are stylized for a guy going through that. You look great. The glasses look great. Yeah. You got it all going on.
I do what I can.
Here's the thing. We were talking off the air about this just a second ago, and you two and Dave were certainly in this building longer than the rest of us. We get it. Times change. Things change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a melancholy week around here because the newspaper's gone. We're the last ones. We're supposed to turn the lights out because a week from today, I think we're going to be in the new place. The new place, fantastic.
Great.
Unbelievable, but... You know, it's a different deal, even the Tribune Tower. Yeah.
By the way, I have a nomination for the person to turn the lights off.
Who's that?
Aubrey Mumpower.
Here's why.
Years ago, now WGN, we've literally been here as long as the station has been here.
Yeah, you guys were all here in 86, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We came 86, over from Bradley.
Yeah.
Dan Fabian brings us over for a first look at the new digs. We're back in what used to be the big Studio A, looking around. All of a sudden, I hear this noise. Aubrey Mumpower's head pops out of the floor.
The floating floor had Aubrey
underneath.
Where
he was laying all of the cable.
Really?
That was my first...
So all that hair comes popping up. Ah!
That's a little frightening.
It is.
And for those of you who don't know Aubrey...
Bless his heart.
Imagine Arlo Guthrie.
Yeah. That's... Well, you know what I've said? He's the Simpsons bus driver.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, yeah, he's the bus driver on the Simpsons. That's Aubrey.
Like we say in the South, again, bless his heart.
Bless his heart. memories of this building. What stands out for you guys?
Oh, gosh. I remember being intimidated when we first came over for the big party, the big champagne unveiling of the digs. And when we first came here, I had been hired to work with Steve for a few hours a night and then stay and do traffic with Bob Collins.
Mm-hmm. That's a long show.
Well, yes. And all of that happened, you know, with the transition with Wally leaving the morning show, Bob coming here.
Yeah,
all of that happened at the same time. This Showcase studio was Traffic Central. This was my studio, which was funny because from day one, I tried to negotiate a wardrobe. I said, hey, if I got to sit out front there every day, I need money for clothes.
Yeah.
So weather was where I'm sitting now and traffic is where you're sitting. And we had that high... The area where the host sat, and we peons sat at their feet, and the host sat up high looking down on us.
The big podium was over there.
Big podium with a light wall behind it, which made it about 15 degrees warmer out here.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
And then we had the lighted map on the wall that has the skyline on it now. Yep. That was connected to the sensors in the expressway system.
Did it work well?
It worked.
And
it
was crazy. That was the most expensive wall in the city of Chicago.
I don't doubt it.
Well, this room was second only to the number one operating room at Northwestern Hospital in cost.
Wow.
So Not cleanliness, literally. Just cost.
That's tremendous.
Cleanliness just underneath.
Yes, right, right. Yes. So I had to sit there with my back to people every day so that they could come and look at the lighted map to see what their trip was going to be like. And
did you have the same issues that Annie Maxfield had? And occasionally, somebody might come by the window and flash you.
I had a regular.
You had a regular flasher.
It was never taken seriously, which is too bad, because by the time people got here, he was gone. I said, but really?
Yeah.
No, too bad.
Crazy as
that. We didn't have cell phone cameras. I could turn around and go, snap.
Yes.
Gotcha, buddy.
Dean got flashed by Barbara Eden. I got flashed by Governor Jesse Ventura.
I'm sorry.
He was here with the security detail, and he and I go back a long way. They literally surrounded him like it was pre-planned, and he picked up his shirt and started rubbing his belly against the window. Hey, very gubernatorial, sir.
Yes.
What was Collins' flasher? He had a regular flasher. What was her name?
Because we did the show out here every Friday, which he hated.
Okay.
He moaned. Thursday was just moaning because he had to go out front.
So funny. He and Spike had the same thing. They wanted to be nowhere in front of a bunch
of
people.
When you're in front of that wall, it was hot. I mean, you would sweat. It was 15 degrees hotter than it was where you're sitting down below.
The radiation pouring off it.
The only good thing about that wall was when Vanna White came in. It was all big squares, lighted squares.
So she could stand and
that's hilarious.
And touch a light, and it would light up, and so we milked that.
But I just thought of one of the great Collins gotchas.
Yes.
It was a birthday celebration for Collins.
It was his 50th birthday.
And he was not a huge Adrian's Med fan.
Oh, golly.
Hard to believe. And
so
he was openly.
We lined up.
Openly. Oh, on the radio.
We lined up a morning when he was out here, when it would be nothing but things he hated.
Everything
that
he
would
hated.
Come by.
Including.
The by the window?
Yeah. Yes.
Like a parade of stuff to drive Bob nuts.
He's
That's
looking
tremendous.
Out the window, and this policeman comes running across the street, and he runs up to the window, and he hits the window real hard, and Bob goes, oh, dear God, it's Adrian Smed. I hate him.
And Adrian was a friend of ours, and we had set it up.
And he knew it. He was in on it.
And he had the whole TJ Hooker out there.
He had the outfit on. He's banging on the glass. And Bob's going, I don't want to talk to him.
And remember the clowns?
He hated clowns.
Oh, yeah. He was afraid of clowns, right?
So coming from Lower Michigan, we had a troop of clowns walk up to the window. And he tried And then he didn't.
Look at you two.
He didn't like cats.
Oh, I didn't know this.
So that was the very morning that in the 9 o'clock hour, a car pulled up and a basket of cats was dropped in front of the studio. And he goes, what are the damn cats doing out there? I don't want any cats. Who needs cats?
But then also remember, you know, Larry Langford, spokesperson for the Chicago Fire Department now. Mm-hmm. Larry was one of my best men when we got
married. Oh, is that right?
Yes.
So that morning, big Cadillac pulls up. Larry gets out looking like a pimp.
Big pimp hat on.
With his girl, who is Larry Schreiner dressed up. Johnny had put pantyhose on Larry Schreiner.
So the most hideous prostitute in the world.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I did makeup, and we had a wig.
You guys put some planning into driving Bob
nuts. We're not doing radio the right way anymore.
How about that?
And sadly, this was not being seen by anyone. It was theater of the mind, so we had to tell people that.
And there's no way you could videotape it, because it took a giant camera that had to be rolled up.
Yep.
You couldn't shoot it on your phone.
And how did he figure it out?
Each one revealed itself, I guess, right? I mean, Larry comes up to the window, and you probably know it's not the...
It was kind of scary, because that was the first part of the gotcha morning. That was the 5 a.m. hour, followed by the 6 a.m. hour, which
each
is the
hour,
clowns.
There was a different thing.
Oh, I forgot the mimes.
He hated mimes.
So we had the mimes stand outside the whole morning for 4 hours. They stood outside miming.
That's tremendous.
He says, I can't stand mimes. Why are they doing this? He called security. Security was in on it. They knew not to touch.
Yeah, we can't touch the mimes.
Don't touch the mimes.
We have a no touching of the mimes thing.
Yes.
Well, you know, when I was thinking about this building and thinking about you guys, I think about all the bands you had, all the music.
Yes.
And not just a repeat guest, but all the music you broke overnight and all the people you had through. Nobody did that. In fact, I will never forget one of the first New Year's that we broadcast from the Showcase studio. We had a group called Those Darn Accordions. It's 12 accordion players.
Only accordion.
In this studio playing Led Zeppelin as people were walking by saying, the hell?
What's yeah, how drunk am I? Right?
So it was, actually, that was 4th of July.
Oh. Was that 4th of July?
Yeah, the crowd coming down for the 3rd of July. It was
you're right.
3rd into
either
the
way, 4th. Different yes. holiday, yeah. same liquor.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, same crazies. But that was, again, kind of a gotcha because they're like, oh no, they're playing accordion.
Well, once we flipped this, what, 2000, 2001, whatever it was, yes. were you guys out here very often?
Yes, we did all the holidays
yeah.
out here.
Yeah,
we would do July 4th and New Year's Eve.
Because there's a noise restriction. The alderman, there's a noise restriction that was, I don't even know if I have the legend right, but a woman who lived in one of the high-rises.
Mm-hmm. Right across the street.
Yeah, who took action against the city because yep. of the noise coming out of the speaker, so the noise had to be limited.
But
what you guys must have seen at 2 and 3 a.m. had to
well,
be quite entertaining.
We were able to, because J.C., Jim Carrillo.
Yeah, the late great.
Actually yes. went over to the woman's apartment, and the sound from the outside speaker would bounce down and came right into her bedroom.
It was
so,
legit.
So she had a legitimate complaint.
Sure.
But we worked it out with JC that we would get special permission, or didn't let them know, for New Year's Eve and for July 4th, and we would have the speaker on for the whole show so
sure.
we could interact with the people out on Michigan
So that's
Avenue.
Why we didn't come out here, because it was kind of awkward if you're sitting out here and people came by and they couldn't hear anything at 11
yeah.
o'clock.
Right,
so
right, right,
standing
right.
around outside. So we said, well, we're better back in the bowels of the building.
But you mentioned security. I will never forget one of our post 9/11 security moments.
Uh-huh.
There was a regular listener. Her name was Marianne. Marianne made wonderful cheesecakes. And
I think I know about Marianne.
Around the holidays, yeah. she would want to bring cheesecakes. Well, long story short, right after 9/11, Marianne, who also had another job, pulls up on Michigan Avenue, runs into security with this box that was a box of cheesecakes.
And those cheesecakes each weighed, what, 15 pounds?
Oh,
easy.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I threw my
so
back out,
heavy.
Karen.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
So this woman comes in, drops the boxes. These are for Stephen Jotty.
And
runs out. We get a call from security.
This is days after 9/11?
This is days after 9/11. Security, they
not
weren't
happy
campers.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, security drags the box of cheesecakes out on Michigan Avenue.
Had dogs around it.
Dogs, guns,
and they blew it up.
These boxes
they blew
of cheesecake.
It up.
No, because fortunately our producer was able to call and say, wait a minute, we'll be out. And,
right.
and gave them a few cheesecakes.
Well, yeah, we said, then one happens to be sliced just for security. Here. Yeah.
Wow. More with Steve and Johnny coming up in a second.
Now, live from Michigan Avenue, Chicago. This is Steve and Johnny's Life After Dark on News Talk 720 WGN.
We're talking about 9/11, the bowels of the building, as it's been described. I called it the Vegas room because that showroom back there had about 12 positions, 12 to 15
oh, yeah.
positions where
yep.
people could be on mic at any given time. And the first time I filled in doing a weekend thing in between being thrown out of other places, I had a producer who was talking in my headphones, but I had no idea where they were. And they were sitting in this perch above in this producer's booth, literally an hour and a half into the show. I had no idea. I just kept hearing them in my head. I was talking to them, but couldn't see them. It's literally the biggest studio I've ever seen.
Oh, and we had people come into our studio from around the world, and they walked in and would gasp.
Yeah.
They had just come from New York or L.A., and they were like, what?
Well,
it's gorgeous.
Every Christmas, we would have the 40 kids from the Woodstock High School choir.
And all with plenty of room.
In that studio.
Yeah.
yeah.
And we would line them up and activate both sides of the studio, so A and Combo. A,
yeah, yeah.
And they would all the way around, so all the microphones would be hot, and we were able to mic all 40 of them and let all 40 of them step up to the microphone with their Christmas wishes, which was really cool. But we did that for 15 years, 16 years.
Something like that.
Yeah. And this building was famous for fake walls and storage areas.
Yes, the Wally room.
Yeah, and there were rooms where things were kept behind walls and you didn't know the walls were there.
You pushed the wall and it would swing open. We called it the Wally room because it kept all of... before the internet, you had to have file cabinets with files on everyone. So he would take all of his clipped newspaper articles, as did Roy Leonard, and they would have a file cabinet, and they would drop everything you would ever want to know about that person. So when they came back to town, pull the file, and now you got a big fat file out.
There was an interesting security moment involving that secret wall.
The secret wall?
Yes.
Nick DiGilio, it was his 30th
birthday.
So,
and he was a regular
on
our
studio.
Okay.
And having some fun with him. And as a surprise, we had Nick's dad hiding behind that wall.
That's so great.
Now, on the right cue, Nick's dad was supposed to light the cake
sure.
that he had with him.
Right.
With
31 candles on it.
And walk somehow out of it. He got the cue wrong. Smoke sensors go off. Security gets that. Security comes up.
And they're not happy. Yeah. And Nick's dad is standing there with this blazing Lion King cake
yes.
because Nick hated
Nick hates
the Lion King.
King.
So
that's
we
tremendous.
Themed his whole party as the Lion King. And his dad's standing there wide-eyed like, what'd I do? And I mean, everywhere. There was fire trucks outside. And,
sure.
Because the tower was going to be on fire. And it was on scanners. You know, fire yeah,
right.
at the Tribune Tower.
Suddenly showing up as a news story.
Well, you guys sure like to abuse everybody on their birthday. Did anybody ever
and your point
you?
Is?
No, thankfully, because I think it's because there were two of us.
Yeah.
I don't think
you actually abused me one time.
Well, listen, what happens actually, behind closed doors is none of our business.
Remember the...
you hated Barney.
Barney.
And I hired Barney's yes. drunken brother to come down here and entertain. And Barney's drunk almost got us sued because when we talked about Barney's... This was his... Bernie. It's his drunken
yeah,
brother, Bernie.
Bernie.
His drunken so brother he's Bernie. Wearing a Barney
and
costume.
And we still have a picture of the drunken Bernie on the floor out in Master
hilarious.
Control
with a
wine bottle next to him.
With the head on?
Yes. Yeah. And then the Barney people said... You can't wear that costume and do vulgar things like that.
I love you. Yeah, remember that?
We all sang that to Steve. And
was
Barney.
He purple, too?
Now, I remember you guys used to have killer holiday parties,
yeah.
huge holiday
yeah.
parties. And just about the time I got here, Justin Kaufman, the party started to appear in the hallways
yeah.
of the Tribune Tower, and they started downsizing the parties. But for years,
we did
they would
drapes.
Set up the holiday parties, and this is a weird design in the old place because it was basically geometric squares with mm-hmm. offices and things in the middle. So you go down one hallway for hors d'oeuvres, you go down another hallway
yep.
for psychics, a third hallway might have a string quartet
yep.
yes.
For the Christmas party. Good times.
But before that, we always look forward to the party because the Drake was the site of one of our parties where Milt Rosenberg got on a table.
Literally, middle of the Christmas
what,
party.
Wait. What?
Yes.
Middle of the Christmas party, and Milt Rosenberg gets up on one of the tables
and
sort of looks
around
to see how things
really?
Are going.
Yes.
That
and
is tremendous.
Everybody's just like, okay, Milt's on a table. Not sure what that means.
Was a lampshade involved?
No.
But now, just Milt being Milt.
There was the moment when we had a Christmas party and Bob, God bless him,
yep.
walked in with a Santa Claus shirt on. Mm-hmm. And everybody was wearing, I mean, these were formal affairs. We wore, you know, guys wore suits and ties and girls wore their Christmas finery. And he came in a Santa Claus t-shirt. Well, Santa was there. And we were all supposed to have our picture taken with Santa. And Santa walks up and pokes him in the belly and says, hey, who do you think you are?
It was a moment.
Oh, man.
Well, a fist fight almost broke out.
I don't doubt it.
Yes.
Yep, I don't doubt
they,
it.
Yep, they grabbed him. They pulled him to the side. They're holding him back. It was like a cartoon. His hands are held back. You don't poke me in the stomach. In a Santa Claus shirt.
Yeah, basically between midnight and 6, the place went nuts. And by the way, we had a major Supreme Court ruling that Ryan will have here in just a second involving voting, or in this case, maybe not voting. So we'll get to that coming up. A hard question to answer, but one thing you'll miss most about the building?
The building.
Yeah.
This is a
it's
special
all of it,
place.
Right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
When we stopped working full-time, we stood on the dock and just stood on the dock and savored the fact that we walked that dock.
Yep.
You know, for 27 years,
yep.
you walk up that dock. And
the very first time we walked into this building,
yeah.
and I don't know if anybody's pontificated about this, but I will for a second. I don't know that the people that are taking over the building have any sense of the history of this building.
I don't think so.
How
either.
Important it is. This
I,
is a
I hope
place.
They do, but if not for the fact yeah. that it was a historical place and therefore yeah. protected, I'm not sure they'd be keeping any of it.
Yeah.
The lobbies will be protected, but from the moment I got off the elevator the first time here, the historical quotes and etchings in the wall to me are even more impactful than the various rocks
yep.
that are embedded outside.
Yep.
So,
yeah. do we know if they're going to stay? Or
I think so.
They have to buy historical. I'm not sure about the rocks outside, but I know that the
facade?
Lobby and the facade and all the stuff has to stay.
Because good. Of landmark status.
Good.
Yes. A lot of granite countertops inside the building, but they have to keep the stuff outside.
Right. Progress. Progress.
By the way, can we, if we have 2 seconds, we have our own little bit of breaking news.
Yes.
What's that?
The new schedule, of course, starts, on the 18th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what we hope.
And it will
the
see...
The first 11 to 1 a.m. time slot is on Wednesday the 20th. And we're doing that show.
We're not going to be doing it permanently. It's just the first time we're going to inaugurate that.
Hey, listen,
slot.
You never know. It could go well enough where you kids may get a shot.
Yeah.
Guys could do another 27 years.
Right.
Well, it's great to see you. You look fabulous. Thank you for the stories. I guess all the years I've known you, I never knew you guys were so devious. I couldn't be more proud of you. Yeah, tremendous work. Steve and Johnny, and listen to you guys again when? Next Wednesday?
Wednesday night. 20th. From 11 to 1.
And, of course, streaming always.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
That's your money on 720 WGN.
Did you want to say something about Steve and Johnny?
Well, it was a pleasure working with them for 75 years. We just had a great time of turning the show over, taking the show away from them as we came on in the morning.
Sure. But
a lot of great time with Steve and Johnny.
Tomorrow morning, when you and I have a little extra time together, I'd love for you to tell us a few stories about the building. This looks like it's going to be our final week here.
Well, I did the final show Saturday morning in one of the studios. I'm not sure which one because I'm at WGN West in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Right.
But Bob Ferguson, my engineer, said that show Saturday morning from 5 to 6 was the last show in that studio.
We keep closing doors, don't we? Turn out the lights, Mary Tyler Moore. All right, more from you tomorrow. Thank you, sir.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
.944, one of Chicago's finest in studio, Rhymefest, and his lovely wife, Donnie, and Justin Kaufman's here, and Justin, I'm going to let you jump in first, because I don't waste any time.
Jay Rhymefest-Smith and Donnie Smith run Donda's House, which is a arts cultural organization for Chicago's kids, for Southside kids, and it was called Donda's House up to, last week?
And now it's Art of Culture, right? I want to get this right.
It's called Art of Culture, both... this was founded back in 2011, and Donda West, who is Kanye West's mother, and Rhymefest has spent an eternity working with Kanye West, and I think it was Memorial Day weekend. Was that right?
Yeah.
Jay decided to go to Twitter and got into it with Kanye West's wife, Kim Kardashian West, and I was in New York, and I woke up, and I'm like, huh. Jay's beefing with Kim Kardashian. Good person to beef with,
but
this was a big deal.
But... it looks like you're trying to make things okay, trying to smooth things out. You're very complimentary about what she did last week, where she helped facilitate a pardon for a woman who never should have been in jail, probably for a minute, let alone all the time that she had of her life taken away. So where are we? Are you getting along with your old buddy Kanye?
Well, it depends. What do you call getting along? Like, you know what I mean? But, everything is still sensitive. You know, Kanye and I have had over 20-something year relationship, and you know, basically the work that we do in Chicago with the young people, with the arts, we were getting calls of concern by our sponsors and funders because of comments Kanye was making politically, socially, and the conversations Kanye and I were having behind the scenes were, you know, either you're going to support or you're going to stop hurting the work that we're doing in Chicago.
Seems right.
And those conversations broiled over onto Twitter and extended into me getting, or into his wife making comments at me.
It's an amazing story, and it's one because you have had a long history with Kanye. I mean, we talked about all the albums that you've worked on. Mm-hmm. You've obviously done collaborations with him. Mm-hmm. There has been a tremendous Chicago connection, and a lot of people may not recognize that you have continued this relationship with Kanye West, even as he's grown into a student. Mm-hmm. Talk about that relationship and how it started Donda's House in 2011.
Well, it really started with the mentorship of Kanye's mom, Dr. Donda West, who was a Fulbright scholar. She was the dean of education at Chicago State University. She was an expert in Russian poetry, you know, and she was also one of my mentors. I mean, I admire, I love the woman. What hurts so much about the situation is my feelings for Kanye's mom and the work that she had done to grow us into whatever whatever you see in entertainment today. She knew nothing about music, but she knew about humanity.
Right.
So she would say things when we would have our raps about how many drugs we sold, how many people we shot. Did you really do that? Is that really who you
are? Is that the message?
Is that the and you say, no, I'm just trying to get on the radio because that's what they like. And she said, well, can you live your whole life in a lie that you told about yourself? Your truth is the best song you never wrote.
Right.
And so when you see the success of Kanye West, it is because of sharing truth. So when you see the program we're doing now at Art of Culture, what was Donda's house, that's what we teach young people in art. Share your truth.
And right. Donnie, as a teacher, I mean, you want the same thing we all want. We just want kids to be able to maximize their lives and be safe in the city and to do what they can do.
Absolutely. I taught in Chicago Public Schools for 12 years prior to co-founding Donda's house. Now Art of Culture with Kanye and Che. And absolutely, even when everything spilled out on Twitter, my biggest concern were all of the students who were paying attention.
Yeah, you know, and because you know they are.
Absolutely. And they don't do what we say. You know, they do what we do.
Yeah.
And so Che and I were most concerned about making sure that they were okay. They actually helped to select the new name. About 2 weeks ago, we had a community meeting and we're gearing up for summer. We just had a great showcase at the Chicago Blues Festival yesterday.
Moving ahead.
And, you know, the work goes on.
I love Donda's house. It's been something that I've been connected with, and you guys have done such a great job with it. What does it mean to lose the name, though? Because the name, as much as this is a feud and Kim Kardashian West getting involved and Kanye West, and you can understand that you want to change the name because of the association, what does it lose, though, when you just talked about your relationship with Kanye's mom? And I mean, it just feels like it's so petty to lose the name of someone that you're trying to celebrate the work that she did.
Well, I'll show you like this. Like this is not a feud and it's nobody to blame. We keep doing the movement, man. Forget the name. I'm hanging out with Steve. Got rhymes you can't believe. And I got the tricks freestyling from the sleeve. And you know I get off when I'm hanging out with Kaufman. Yeah, boy, I said it. My man here is edit. He don't edit. He do the sports. I couldn't think of nothing else. Well, yeah, it's just like.
Yes.
So we teach, like, well, look, man. Before we shut this
building down, that's one of the coolest moments right there.
Yeah, right?
Shut it down. Move it around. It's shot town. That's what we're doing. We're teaching young people to not focus so much on how it looks or validation, but to just move with the flow of the day and just move with the music. Stop planning so hard. Donda's house, which is now Art of Culture, we put the work in. The kids know us. So it's interesting. Like, even when Kim kind of came at us on Twitter, we saw the community stand up. And we saw people stand up and say, you may not know who he is, but we know who he is.
Right.
And that validated the work. You know what I'm saying?
And ultimately, Donda's legacy and her values still live within the organization.
Right.
I mean, when it comes to our curriculum, it is based on what she was doing.
The guidance is there.
Exactly. Yeah. So even though we have a new name, she is still very much alive.
Art over celebrity, that's what we're talking about. Now, let me ask you the hard question. Money. It's got to get paid for it, and the more money that comes in, the better, because you can do more things, you can get more kids involved. Does a rift with Kanye and company create a money problem?
It actually doesn't, because we were losing sponsors and losing, and there was just also this misperception that we were a private charity and we're actually a public charity.
Right.
And so people assume that Kanye was kind of paying for everything anyway. And so with this new name, it really just helps to set the record straight.
I think that's an important fact to make.
Publicly.
And I was going to say that is a misconception, because his mother's name was on it, that he was involved in it. He was involved in creating it, but he wasn't giving you guys money. He wasn't actually funding it.
In the last few years that we had been operating, since we had really been doing the work with our mission statement, he had not been donating anything to the organization. However, some of his public comments were hurting the organization. And so that's when we had to have our private discussions.
Let me ask one question of you, Che. You know, we've known each other for a long time. I have watched you in the last year travel the world. you have become much more zen about your life. If you listen to your music, it's changing. What's happening with you? What is it about growing older that is changing you as an artist and as a human
being? Centered.
Yeah, trying to avoid a midlife crisis at 40. And I think when you try to avoid that midlife crisis, the only thing you can do is become more zen. And look, man, we're in a disenchanted universe, as Tim Mayo would say. And I think as the world is becoming more tribal, especially America, is becoming more tribal, it is incumbent upon us to become more peaceful.
Amen. Amen. Well, it's like the Michelle Obama line, right?
When they go low,
we go high.
We go high. But then, when they go high, we just go to the middle.
Eventually, it'll all adjust.
Balance. All
right, now tell me, how do we help?
So for more information, you can visit our website. It's artofculture.org.
Make a donation online if you like.
You can make a contribution. You can come and volunteer with us. We'll actually be operating about 5 days a week all summer. We're based at Diet High School for the Arts on the South Side.
Oh, great.
And then we're Art of Culture, Inc. on all social media channels.
All right. Artofculture.org or Art of Culture, Inc.
Artofculture.org or Art of Culture, Inc.
Great,
on social.
Great to see both of you. You know, you're welcome here anytime.
We trying to raise some money. We hanging out with Steve and Justin. That it ain't funny. Hey, down in Michigan.
Wait,
I can't think of nothing else that didn't have a curse running. Ha ha!
You are welcome here anytime, my friend. And Donnie, you of course as well. Nice to see you both.
Thanks, you too.
Keep up the great work. Bill and Wendy coming up 720 WGN.
Gordon Lightfoot in concert. The legend lives on Sunday, September 16th at Copernicus Center. The tour features such hits as Early Morning Rain, If You Could Read My Mind, Carefree Highway. You want to continue?
What?
Sundown?
Sundown, you better take care.
That's
what you get for loving me.
Mm-hmm.
The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa and down to the big lake they call Gitchigumi.
Gitchigumi!
It's the Wreck of the Ella Fitzgerald.
It's a totally different wreck.
Did I get that wrong?
That's a wrong wreck.
Other deep album cuts, all woven together with some of Lightfoot's own behind-the-scenes stories and personal anecdotes. Reserve seat tickets go on sale today at 10 a.m. at Copernicus Center. Will you be singing online?
I will. Dave, you probably don't know this, but the legend it is said never gives up her dead until the gales of November come early.
I've heard that.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Okay. At the Copernicus Center online, CopernicusTickets.org, brought to you by 111 Productions and Danny Zalisco presents.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Do you know that Rhymefest has a Grammy and an Oscar? And he was nominated for an Emmy. He lost, but he's on his way. He doesn't have a Tony yet, or a Tony.
He'll get it. If he wants it, he'll get it.
He's like the new Rita Moreno.
Yeah.
Right?
He's
very similar.
Most of the hip-hop blogs say the same thing.
Yeah.
They're always...
You know what's funny is we had Steve and Johnny on in the first half hour, Rhymefest, a couple minutes ago. I couldn't tell them apart.
No.
I didn't know which one was which.
Yeah.
All right. You want some fun facts about Singapore before the show's
over? Oh, yes. Yeah.
Singapore
please.
Fun facts?
What do you got?
Singapore is the world's tallest indoor waterfall, 35 meters high. It's in Gardens by the Bay. You don't think that Kim Jong-un's playing in that water right now? You don't think he's splashing around in the waterfall?
Marco.
Number two, the Great Singapore Duck Race is held every year to raise money for charity. It's like the duck race we do here.
We do that for the Special Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
I think these are real ducks.
Now, Singapore is an island state. It's a city state.
Yeah.
They actually import sand from Malaysia. And fresh water.
Hmm.
Sand and fresh water from Malaysia.
I didn't know any of this.
There's nothing like fresh water from Malaysia. Chewing gum is banned in Singapore. Remember when a kid got caned?
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are we going to that? We're going there again?
Chewing gum banned in Singapore unless you have a medical prescription. What would you need a prescription for gum for?
Then why did they invite Bazooka Joe to this summit? That's curious, isn't it?
That's fair. It does seem strange.
That's the first thing Trump's going to do. He's going to pop some bubblicious.
If you're given a gift in Singapore, it's rude to open it in front of the person who gave it to you. You're supposed to wait until later.
Oh.
I like that anyway, because I usually don't like what people give
me. What if they tell you, hey, go ahead, open it.
Yeah.
Nope, can't
You're being set up.
Yeah.
Really? Don't fall for it.
Get caned.
Yep.
Singapore is made up of one large and 63 small islands.
Did not know that.
Okay. I knew that. So, they taught us that in first grade.
Most Singaporeans choose to boil their water before drinking it and will often drink water warm.
Oh.
That's where you lost me.
Yeah.
Warm water. Singapore is a city, a capital, and a state all at once. There's only three city-states in the world. Can you name the other two?
Elk Grove Village.
Nope. Not one. Not one.
No?
Not one.
Dave?
Dave, do you know?
Yes, because
I told you half an hour.
Yeah, Vatican City and Morocco.
Oh.
Monaco.
Monaco.
Morocco Mole.
You told me the answer.
You were close.
Oh.
Singapore, October 1st, a national day dedicated to kids under the age of 12. It's like Kids Day. And Singapore is also called Singapura, which translates to Lion City in Sanskrit. And I understand you're going to do your portion of the show today in Sanskrit?
Completely in Sanskrit today.
Okay. All right.
Sanskrit Mondays.
I feel like this is a unification sort of thing for us. It's a way to let the audience in on all the good times happening in Singapore
now. That's true. Hmm? That's true.
I'm a giver.
Yes. Yes, you are a giver.
What are you guys doing today?
Singapore stuff. Facts.
Yeah. We were going to do an hour and a half on Singapore stuff. Facts. Yeah, but yeah, thanks, Steve.
Seems totally right. Well, what else?
We have Audrey Wright coming in. She's a junior at Lawndale College Prep, and she has started this peer group for kids who might have issues, and she's doing a TED Talk tomorrow. So we're having her on. She's done an amazing job.
What time is the TED Talk?
Well, that's tomorrow.
That's a good question, Steve.
Way to listen. God, you listen just like my husband does.
How long will it last, Wendy, the TED Talk?
Actually getting a text from Lou Manfredini, but it's a whole other thing.
Oh.
We got to go. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For all the details, listen to Steve Cochran.
I thought the end of the show was strong today. How'd you guys
Very feel? Strong.
It was.
Very strong end of the show.
Listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.